brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo, talking with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They are both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they are pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. Peter, where are we in the church year?
We are talking about the 11th Sunday after Pentecost, a time when we think about the work of the Holy Spirit in His church.
And David, what are the texts for this week?
The texts are Exodus 16, Ephesians 4, John 6, and then Psalm 145.
As always, I ask each of you to tell me which text you would choose to preach on. To determine who goes first, I want to know your feelings about water parks.
I love water parks. I think they are so fun.
Well, I love water parks too. They're so much better than amusement parks with the roller coasters and...
With the roller coasters, I always get scared because they have like those signs of people, you know, you have to be so tall.
Yeah.
But they have no sign that you need to be shorter than this. And I'm always worried that...
that you're
they,
too tall.
They didn't make it for people like me. I'm going to hit my head.
Well, you both gave the same answer, so I'm not sure who to pick. But David, you answered immediately with so much feeling, I choose you.
Well, thank you. I love that. So I went with Exodus 16. So Israel is in the wilderness, grumbling against Moses, and they're remembering sitting by meat pots and eating bread to the full, and then Moses has taken them out into the desert to die. And so we've got grumbling Israel, and then we have the Lord's response, and the Lord's response is beautiful. So Jessica, if you could read verses 11 and 12.
And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God.
I love that response, that you're going to know I'm the Lord your God. How? Because I'm going to provide you food in the morning and at night. It's just a beautiful, God wants them to know him. They're grumbling. God hears their grumbling. And he wants them to know that he's their Lord by giving them food in the morning and at night. Every day for 40 years, you're going to have this, right? And so it made me think about routines, morning routines, evening routines. Do you have morning routines?
Oh, you have to if you have kids.
Why?
Because otherwise you won't get to school.
Okay. But summertime is a time where routines go out the window, and that's what makes it hard sometimes.
Routine is good for kids, right? Otherwise, no one would brush their teeth. Nobody would wash their face. If there's a routine to it,
right,
then it can happen
faster. It helps you navigate the day.
Right.
I mean, I have my routine. Unfortunately, mine starts way too early. It's at 3:30 in the morning.
Oh,
I know.
What do you do at 3:30 in the morning?
My cat wakes me up
every
for
day?
Food. Oh, my gosh. It's awful.
Oh.
I'm like, I'll be laying there, and all of a sudden at 3:30, I'll feel this small paw touching my face. And I try to ignore it. And then she just starts smacking me until I get up and feed her. So that's my routine. It starts at 3:30. But then I get back to bed and I can sleep and then I'll get up. But if I don't have a routine, my life, it just gets all wonky. I'm not sure what's going to happen. And having a routine can be so settling. And like you're saying, with the kids, you're never going to get to school if you don't have a routine.
No, it wouldn't happen.
And so God creates a routine for his people. At night and in the morning, you're going to go out, you're going to gather meat, you're going to gather bread. Every day, in night and morning, God is going to feed you. And I just think it's kind of a beautiful way of thinking about how the Lord is present with us for all of our life. And we have these routines where we just it's built into how we live, the knowing that God is there for us. And so, you know, have you ever been on a trip and you're on a trip and like somebody has really overplanned everything, and it's good because they, you know, they're like, oh, I thought this would happen. Here's some handy wipes, or, you know, whatever. This is the beauty of it, right? Is that when somebody is there providing you just what you need, and if they've taken care of the small things, you know they're going to take care of the big things. Mm-hmm. And so Israel is wandering through this wilderness. They've kind of been uprooted from Egypt, delivered from slavery, promised to go to this promised land, but they didn't make it in. Now they kind of wander for 40 years. And you're kind of wondering, you know, what is this God doing? And in the mystery of not knowing what God is doing, there's the certainty that he is providing for me. Every morning, every evening, he's providing for me. And knowing that he's taking care of this small stuff and is aware of it helps me trust that he's got the big stuff planned for me.
It's kind of like the pattern and the habit of having prayers before meals, right? Where
right.
You had this routine where, you know, the come Lord Jesus, be our guest, let these gifts to us be blessed. It's kind of this reminder every evening, every morning, as you sit down to eat, that God is providing for you.
And right.
There's that stability there.
Right. And, you know, when I say that prayer before I eat, because I eat alone, I love the hour. Mm. Be our guest. Because I realize I'm not alone, even though I am. Not that I'm part of a larger community that God is providing for, right?
Yeah.
I mean, those prayers, they have a way of awakening you to the presence of God. And so, for me, I would kind of, I mean, number one, I love the beauty of the fact that they are grumbling and God acts mercifully, right? I mean, I'd smack them around, but you know.
Like your cat.
I know, like my cat, right? Yeah, they're grumbling and God acts mercifully. And God not only acts mercifully, but his desire in the end is that they know that I am the Lord your God.
Right.
So how are you going to know that God is your Lord? Well, start looking at the way he's caring for you and build it, let it be built into the routines of your life. I don't know. That's kind
so
of
would
I'm
you
thinking.
Go to from kind of the providing for food here toward kind of the regular provision that God gives us, like in worship, forgiveness, strength,
correct,
these kind of things?
Correct. That's kind of that. If he provides the little things like meat and bread, and then people are saying, well, how can that be little? If you didn't eat those, you'd die. I'll say, well, compared to your soul,
right.
These are pretty little, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
And God's going to provide for that bigger thing, for your soul, for your spiritual life as well. It's not just the physical life, but God's got your physical life in place. He's got your spiritual life in place, and he's going to take care of you. And you build that into your routine. So, I mean, I think we're such an anxiety stricken culture, right? There's so much anxiety about so much. And it would be beautiful to kind of open people's eyes to, you know, the anxiety Israel could have felt, rightly so, you know, being dragged out into the wilderness. You know, how do they know how to survive? They've not been the nomadic people. And now they're called to be that nomadic people.
Right, and to trust in God all the way.
Right.
And for God to provide this almost as a daily reminder of, you can trust me. You
right.
can trust me.
Right.
You can trust me.
And he says, you know, that's why I'm giving you this, that's why I'm giving you this food, so that you know me, so that you know me. And I don't know. That's probably where I might go. And I definitely know the hymn I would choose. I'd go with that Paul Gerhardt hymn, Evening and Morning, Sunset and Dawning, Wealth, Peace, and Gladness.
Can you sing it? I don't recognize
no,
it.
No, I can't sing it. But it's, you know, evening and morning, sunset and dawning, wealth, peace, and gladness, comfort and sadness. These are the gifts and bring glory to you. Do you remember that?
Or? No, but that was lovely.
Oh, it's
and you
gorgeous.
Knew the whole verse.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's I just remember that the hymn moves from naming all of the things that come from God. And then the next stanza, he moves into petition. He moves into prayer. And kind of he because God has given all of these things, he then opens up his entire life to God and starts talking about, I'll bring my errors to you, blot out my errors, you know, all of that type of stuff. And so I think there you've got kind of that dialectic you were talking about, Peter, is that there's that move from the physical blessings to the spiritual blessing. And we see this God, Creator God, who has brought us onto this journey where he's providing the smallest thing, and we trust he's got the biggest thing. And so then we come before him with our prayers of the biggest concerns in our lives, that my errors be blotted out, that the terrors be taken away. And so you've got that movement from praise to God for all that he has done to prayer to God for what you need.
You know what I like about this is it allows you to proclaim as good news the regular.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like we, and I think preachers put this on their own shoulders sometimes, feel the need to have to have some dynamic, extravagant, wonderful, mind-blowing sermon, or people start to expect God to show up in extreme ways.
Right.
And this kind of normalizes the regular provision as a blessing and a gift of God.
Right. And so you see God at work in your daily life.
Right.
Right. Rather than waiting for something awful to happen,
right,
and then be delivered from it,
right?
Know? Yeah,
Peter, what about you?
Well, I was looking at the lectionary, and you know, we've been in Ephesians for a couple of weeks, but I didn't really the passages from Ephesians before this didn't jump out at me. But I'm looking at you know, so I like to plan ahead a little bit, and I'm looking at up until Labor Day, there are 5 more Sundays this summer.
Great.
And
in Ephesians.
And they're all in Ephesians, the epistle readings. They're all in Ephesians 4, 5, and 6. And it starts with Ephesians 4 this Sunday, where there's kind of a transition where Paul has just emphasized the mystery of the gospel, that Gentiles and Jews are included together. And then he begins chapter 4 with kind of a reflection for a couple chapters on the implications of this good news. And to me, it makes sense to tie together these next 5 Sundays and to preach on the epistle readings. So I'm going to suggest a series of 5 sermons. And the theme I'm going to suggest is Walk This Way.
Oh!
Okay. There's all sorts of poems and songs and literature about kind of the life as a journey kind of metaphor.
Right.
The way we go through life. And so I get that out of verse 1 from the reading today. So maybe, Jessica, could you begin by reading 4 verses 1 and go all the way to 3?
I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace.
So Paul says, in light of the gospel that he's been writing about for 3 chapters, I urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called. Walk this way, Paul says. And as you look at the text, I think you could, for the next 5 Sundays, pick out a different aspect of what it means to walk like this. And so I would, this first week, I would say, to walk in a way that is eager for this. So the name of the sermon will be Eager for This.
Eager for This.
Right. So so my idea here for these 5 Sundays is this is going to be key to each of the sermon titles. So Eager for This, Talk Like This, Use Your Time Like This,
okay.
Married Like This, Stand Like This.
Okay.
And so that would be, you know, when you're doing a series, you got to have something to tie them together.
Right, right. So the this is going to hold them all together.
It's going to, along with the readings
from
Ephesians.
Different postures.
Different postures, different angles, different ways to think about walking in a manner that's worthy.
Right.
So notice in verse 3, he says, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit. So the aspect of walk this way has to do with what are we eager for? What are we, I think it's not too far of a stretch to say think about ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone's eager for something, they're striving for.
I love it that it's to maintain it,
yeah.
Not to create it.
Not to create it.
Right? Like you said at the very beginning, you said, you know, that Ephesians 4 is built on 1 through 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so the therefore gives you the opportunity to kind of lay that gospel foundation.
Right.
Right, which has given us unity in the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we move into eagerness to maintain that.
Right. This is, I mean, again, this is just kind of first thoughts here. Yeah. Just thinking about what are we eager for? Sometimes we're eager for something good. Sometimes we're eager for something not so good. Sometimes we're ambitious in noble ways. Sometimes we're ambitious in ways that aren't so noble. But so I would bring that up in the sermon just to get people thinking about what are they striving for.
So why do you like ambition? Because that always, I think that kind of has a negative tone for some people.
I like bringing up ambition.
Okay.
Because I don't think it's the kind of thing we talk about in the church very often.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help
Christians? Because it's negative. No. Well, I'm joking.
Stop talking about it. I know.
Stop talking about it.
No, but, you know, people, it's, I don't know how much we talk about a Christian ambition or a Christian eagerness or striving.
Right.
We tend to, sometimes we play off Paul talking about being, I'm content in all situations, almost as if it's more godly to hold back.
To just sit back.
To just sit back.
Right. And not engage.
But I think there's a way to, and I don't know exactly how I would do
this. Well, you know,
sermon,
eagerness, for me, eagerness does have a childlike quality to it, actually. When I think of being eager, you're just kind of bouncing in your seat waiting for something to happen, whereas ambition is a much more mature quality to me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's
it. But it also seems more selfish. Usually your ambition is to succeed, right? To forward yourself, to advance yourself.
Well, I think that's kind of what – sometimes our eagerness is the same. You know, I'm eager to improve my situation, or I'm eager to accomplish something. Or so I think the line between eagerness, I think that's maybe why I thought of it. I did look it up. It's a different word in the Greek, so maybe I would have to take a little bit closer look at ambition and eager.
Yeah.
But at any rate, this would be kind of an entree into the sermon where Paul is saying, okay, Christians, walk this way. Be eager for this. Mm-hmm. Be eager to maintain unity. And like you said, David, it's a maintain, not create.
Right.
But it is a maintain.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know how eager, at least I tend to be, or I don't know how often we as Christians are eager to maintain unity.
I think a lot of times, this is going to sound really bad, but I can be prone to being eager to disrupt unity to show that I'm right. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, I'll get rid of the unity to prove that it should be, you know, it needs to be smaller because this is exactly where I'm at and I'm right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's kind of a zero sum type of thing.
Right.
You know, for me to be right or for me to
I have to create division.
Right.
To show what that I am right because they're wrong.
Right. So I think this eagerness for maintenance of unity is part of, at least the first in this set of sermons, would be that would be what I'd highlight to emphasize this is the way of the Christian, walk like this. So that then the question is, well, what does this look like? How do you maintain unity in the Spirit? And that's where I would pick up on the verse before, verse 2. Would you read verse 2 again, Jessica?
With all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love.
Okay, there's these four things in verse 2. Humility, gentleness, patience, and bearing with one another. So what I'm thinking about is if I'm preaching on this, I might just spend a little bit of time with each of those four words.
Mm-hmm.
Humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another in love. And what came to my mind was images of a congregation. You know, we all have people in our congregations who give us an image of what it means to be humble,
mm-hmm.
who get no attention, they get no recognition.
And they don't want it.
And they don't want it.
They don't want
and
it, yeah.
And they're the ones
like, could you come out of the kitchen? We'd like to thank you for cooking. No!
Right.
You know?
There's kind of this genuine humility of, kind of, I just want to serve.
Right.
And so you've got a glimpse there. Humility would be one image or one means toward this maintenance. Gentleness. I think about this guy in my congregation up in Minnesota. Jerry was his name. And I looked out my window one time. He was our president of our congregation or head elder or something like that. It was the middle of winter. And he got into a snowball fight with my 5-year-old son at the time.
Man.
And I was sitting in my office looking out the window. And I even recorded it because it was so sweet. And this 75-year-old man throwing snowballs at my son as he was hiding behind a thing and throwing snowballs at him. And it was this gentleness.
Right.
This gentle condescension, this tenderness that was just beautiful.
What I like is, for me, the humility is how you treat yourself, and the gentleness is how you treat others.
Okay.
Right. So humility is not looking for things for myself. I'm kind of pulling into the background and serving, and then the gentleness is how I approach others.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So you could reflect on these. You could go to the next one, the patience. When I think of patience, I don't know about you, I think of Sunday school teachers.
Oh, my.
Think of the ladies in our congregation. I speak of one specific mom who teaches who's so patient with these kids. And I don't think I could handle that. And then I think about bearing with one another in love. And you think about people in the congregation who help carry the burden of those who need a hand.
Mm-hmm.
So you bear with them in love. You help them carry their burden.
I was just at a funeral where the mother had died, and she was the mother of a child with special needs. And at the funeral, it was wonderful to see how everyone knew the child with special needs and was kind of just there for her and kind of helping her along. And it just, I mean, that's that kind of bearing with one another in love. You're bearing the burdens of others, right?
Yeah. And all of these four things all are kind of images, or could give us images of what it looks like to be eager to maintain unity. And so I think what you could do in a sermon is either pick one or two or three or all four of these and offer some images. And that's actually the way I would get then to Jesus in terms of preaching the gospel, because each of those, no matter how many of those four you choose, each of them, they always fall short in some way, because none of us embody that 100%, even though we show glimpses of it by the work of the Spirit. But of course, then Jesus is the one who kind of par excellence is the one who embodies humility, who embodies gentleness, who embodies patience, who bears with those with us in love.
And who was eager to do it.
And who was eager to do
it.
I
know, right? Yeah. Because it's kind of like, instead of, I guess I got to go down there and
right.
die for them. Yeah. Instead, he's eager to give his life.
Yeah, for the joy set before him.
Right, for the joy set before him. He endured the cross. Yeah.
So then I would I want to proclaim Christ and his promises directly to the hearers. And then what I think I do is invite them to hold on to one of those for the next week. The challenge, if you especially if you try to address all four, is they all kind of take you in a little bit different directions. I would invite, I think, the hearers to take one of those to appreciate Jesus' humility or his patience or his gentleness, and then encourage them to walk this way as one who's been filled with his Spirit. Don't try to be gentle, patient, bearing with one another,
right.
Humble,
right.
All at the same time. That's too much.
Right.
But if we can narrow it down and say, each of you take one of these and let that be something you carry with you this week.
Or even, just like if you in the sermon raised up a person for whom you saw their gentleness or something like that, you could encourage people that, if there's somebody in this church that you've seen act in a humble way or show gentleness or bear love, tell them, and awaken them to kind of that aspect of their life that they probably don't even know about. That from your perception, that's what you see happening.
And see, this is the whole goal. The whole goal is to help the congregation walk this way.
Right.
To maintain unity. And that's a collective responsibility. That's a collective call. It's not just a bunch of individuals doing things.
Right.
But together we are doing this with one Spirit, one Lord, one faith, one baptism.
Right.
I just think this could be an encouraging way to help the congregation see what it's doing, to see even more clearly what God has done in Christ, and then to encourage them toward that kind of unified life together.
Yeah.
This is not the typical message that I hear or that I see with other Christians about how to live out your faith, to be eager to. Usually it's be loud and be brave, because then you are standing up against the evil world. Instead of being in a congregation and saying, how can I build unity? How can I do it in a humble way? Or even, outside of the church, I'm thinking of how Christians would engage with the world. The world is my enemy and I will fight them, and I'm eager to have everyone hate me because I'm a Christian. This is totally different.
Well, I think it's actually, for Lutherans, we need to take this seriously, because I think what you're saying there is really a temptation for us that we feel like we need to stand firm and fight and, you know, kind of defend the truth. And there's a time and a place for that. But there's also a time and a place, according to Paul here, where we're not striving for that. We're striving for the unit to maintain the unity that we've already been given.
Thanks, guys. That's all for today. We have free resources to guide your next step in planning at concordiatheology.org. Check it out. You can find more episodes of Lectionary Kickstart and Tangible on any of the major podcast apps. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo. Join us here next week at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Napsker will spark your thoughts for next Sunday.
I mean, I'd smack him around.
But like your cat.
I know, like my cat. You.